How do you dig up the past? How do you pinpoint a fleck of diamond in countless grains of sand? The answer is simple. You bring a shovel. I do not remember much of the previous night. An unforeseen delivery made its way to my door, a sharp object, a vision, cast into the depths of my worrying mind. An enigma draped in blue moonlight, a scepter doused in crimson curse. I could have dropped it into the sea and forgotten it all. But I couldn't let go. You could not let go. But it wasn't guilt that kept me bound to this shard of fate. It was a strong grip around my throat, tightening as I tightened my own grip around you. I experienced what I believe to be the very resurgence of dream. And though it was a harrowing sight, one of despair, defeat, and death, I know this is what it has become. The ancient myth of the pure dream has been torn, twisted, and distorted from what we were told was once our own. But I know now, through me, it will be reborn.
Donovan Lennox!
Dreams drift in and out of our conscious realms, dancing, blending, fusing themselves to memory until we can no longer ascertain what is real from fabrication. Celestial doors may open to reveal sights of awe, but forebode a dreadful fate for our planet on the brink. From Jet Falco and DreamersEcho.com, this is Mondrea Memories, the Dreamers Echo podcast. Stay tuned after the memory to hear a special message from the creator of our show, as well as a bonus scene. Memory 2, Hazel Renald, Hunter for Hire.
It pained me to put on a bit of theatrics of my own. After my personal audience with the King, I had a feeling he would be leaning my way come morn, with all he divulged regarding Ancastillo's cryptic message, and the possible connection exposure to the new vein of Lunaeanite at our border might have to the madness of the lost soldiers. He was developing an infectious belief that my research into ancient Mondrean technologies might bring about the end of this war. I advised my new boss that I should take a moment to return home and plan out the next 29 days with utmost precision. He accepts and advised me to report back with a plan before dusk. Another feeling dawned on me that he'll want to know what I learned through the shard. And what I've seen.
Lieutenant!
Captain Torsion, you wish to see us?
Keeping your eyes glued to Lennox, I trust.
That's impossible. He just left and that would make us super obvious. And it would hurt, and glue is super expensive.
Apologies, Captain.
And what of last night? This morning?
Nothing of importance to report.
Yeah. He's being a huge dolt. Hey, Levi? Hey?
Okay. Is that word gonna be your thing this week?
At least I have a thing. Makes me likable. What's your thing? Besides being constantly silently pissed at me.
Lennox is gone. You don't have to whisper anymore.
Oh, right. Then why are you all whispering?
This is my normal speaking voice. Shut up.
You really have nothing unusual to report. Bumps in his schedule, punctuality, routines, wardrobe choice, what he ate for breakfast, behavior? Nothing out of the norm.
I mean, what do you expect? Man woke up, had some eggs, went to work, showed up here, became general. Pretty normal day.
Now that you mention it, he seems a bit off.
Go on.
Well, last night,
what?
I saw him. Outside, on his balcony.
And what exactly was he doing out there so late?
He was just staring. Out. Into nothingness.
That's it.
What? Boris, you started early. When was this?
A bit past midnight. Oh, sorry, Levi. Cap said watch him. I was just following orders.
Did you even sleep? Do you even sleep?
What else did you see?
Everything. And I mean everything.
Come on, man. At least draw the line somewhere.
Hey, the captain wanted us to be there to watch him, so I watched him.
I bet you did.
That, we can talk about later. Barris, continue. What was he doing out there? He can't have just gone out for some fresh air that late.
He was holding something. Looked like a dull knife, maybe something pointy.
A weapon? Damn it. Was he planning an attack? An assassination?
It didn't seem so. He wasn't even holding it properly. It looked like he was almost gonna drop it into the sea.
Intriguing. Anything else?
He stood there for at least an hour. Then he went back inside, sat at his desk, and just stared at that knifey thing for the rest of the night. Like he was in a trance. Seriously doltish.
Go on.
Come sunrise, it was like he was back to normal. Got up, got ready, had breakfast, and left for work. Don't even think he got a wink of sleep.
Did you?
Me?
We really need to sync our schedules better.
Continue your assignment, boys. And Barris, great work. Both of you, keep your eyes open. Be proactive.
Did you hear that, Levi? Great work.
She said both of you. You gonna follow Lennox? Now? Well then, hey, wait up!
I acted as if I was taken aback, surprised. I hope at least the captain saw it that way. She must have felt a world of shock and perplexity from the look on her face as we dismissed the court. King Brotley himself showed mountains of support for the Mandrea Historia Royalis. The official team of historians dedicated full time to uncovering the holes our ancients left behind. The entire planet of Mandrea is veiled in mystery, and the king wished to uncover it all. Our first records were recently found to be just short of 1,000 years in age, but they were as foolish as children's drawings. Our budding civilization began its slow trudge to oblivion, not knowing our ancient mothers and fathers were clutching tight to a secret of monumental importance. I had felt this secret, enticing, intriguing, pulling at my insides from 40 directions all at once. And the King's History Committee was disbanded at the start of this war, but he allowed me to continue my research alone. Perhaps he believed the secret to unlocking the end of this conflict was buried deep within the knowledge of civilizations before. Decades of funded research, excavations, and expeditions. Pointless! All a waste had I known the resurgence of the dream was to be found in this very enchanted piece of ancient fuel. Delivered right to my doorstep. It's clear to me now why the king would elect a practiced historian over a famed war hero. Not only does a historian bring new light to what can be learned from old wars, beliefs, and practices, but a historian can move chess pieces from behind castle walls. They can prove to be worthy tacticians, studying the board from afar, even predicting the enemy's next moves. As many have seen, history has a way of cycling back around. However, I must be honest. Avela Torshion is much more qualified for this, and for all I care, she can have it, seeing as how she'll no doubt keep her promise and rebel against my leadership. I welcome it. If she can find a way to properly take my seat in the light, I will gladly move back to the shadows and write my reports in peace. But the king's decision must be honored. But why? I ask, why me? He must suspect the secrets of the old world are close. The pieces are in play. He plans to use this mythical power of the ancients to declare check. chose me as mate. I cannot allow such a beautiful, wondrous thing to be used for such calamity. For now, I must move in shadow. The royal court must not know of the full extent of this power, with intent to use it as a weapon. Not until I learn of its true nature. To what end will the dream return? Will it fully manifest itself through me? Will it be mine to share? Or will I simply be the epicenter, a sacrifice to open the door? But where to start? I distinctly remember the narrative of that dream, but the exact details were sparse. Slain in a devastating otherworld battle, sealed in an inanimate object of some sort, and thrown to the darkest depths below. Deadark. I remember that much. The sprawling, lifeless web of canyon, cliff, and deepest ocean cavern farther south along the shore, away from the safe confines of our city. There. That is my destination. To reach such confined, perilous lands, I must first acquire safe passage. Safe, secret passage. I spent the rest of the morning preparing my small traveler's pack with the supplies necessary to survive the desert air for a few days abroad. I cannot use Fenalian transportation, royal or public, as all navigation records are logged instantaneously with the conversational ordinance board. Fuel is precious, and its usage tracked. I must move untracked, and the closest possible unmarked ships outside of pirates and hobbyists are below Fenalia. Deep below Fenalia. The old town, as it's so affectionately called amongst quiet sailors, at the base of our city walls along the touch of the treacherous sea. The market at the abandoned Fenalian dock. I will start there. I hastily threw on a scarf to conceal my face and gathered a few extra supplies to keep me sustained, should I overstay a day or so. One more quick glance in the bag before I shut it and the door. Should be enough.
Wait, how could I leave without the shard? The shard is the key. It's unraveling tapestry of code to serve as my compass and my scope. It will show the way. I cannot leave the shop without it.
And before I could step back and reach for my doorknob with my right hand, my left hand instinctively felt the outer fabric of my inner coat pocket from above the lapel.
It's here. Close to me. How could I forget? Of course.
See? I told you the bloke had a weird knife.
I think the dude might be what's weird. Stay out of the light.
Sorry.
Quiet.
You're listening to Mondrea Memories.
Podcast creators should only partner with products they believe in. That's why I'd like to share my good friend's woodworking at dwarvenworkshop.net. Andy Goodman is a living woodsmith straight out of mythic legend, dedicated to providing you with one-of-a-kind wood decor, art frames, furniture, tabletop gaming supply, and even kitchen and cosmetic items never elsewhere seen, like his handmade beard combs and soap dishes. His custom orders are absolutely mythical legend. When comic creator Jet Falco's keyboard tray broke in half after a comic drawing marathon, Andy stepped up and made him a custom artist dream setup, complete with live edge, stylus tray, mouse pad, and even the Dreamers Echo logo inscribed upon it. There's a picture of it in the guest art section of DreamersEcho.com. He's always willing to turn your imaginative idea into lifelong, tangible wooden creation. To make game night classy, check out his custom-burned dice towers, magnetic deck boxes, and bottle openers, as well as his impressive phone speaker amplifiers to add some bass to your next booming D&D sesh. You gotta see this stuff to believe it. Order the perfect gift for yourself or a friend at dwarvenworkshop.net. That's dwarvenworkshop.net. And tell Andy Jet sent you.
This is Mondrea Memories.
The long walk to the hidden pier. I've only ever made it a few times before on a few procurement missions for a couple of old books or supplies the markets above simply cannot offer. The shops down there have a reputation. The citizens above claim all the bits and baubles of yesteryear that faded away after the start of the war still exist. And that is where you exchange large sacks of coin or other items of value for them. And there is no way of truly knowing if the trade is fair. I really miss that Lufei Academy saber. And the G volume of Encyclopedia Mondrenica just doesn't hold up. The desert roads just outside of town have been cordoned off to prevent unlawful entry in and out of the city, strictly regulating population, transportation, and resources. This created a need, an unwritten need. Several quieter citizens needed to get around regulated checkpoints. As far as I'm aware, there is only one entrance to the underground, behind the clocksmith. But there has to be more. A system of tunnels that complex is never bound to a single gate. I've seen every blueprint and spoken with every city planner and chief builder Fenalia has ever employed, and I've never seen so much as a single sketch of the catacombs. And as far as the king and court know, they don't exist. I've surmised that Fenalian people themselves created the halls below, out of the unwritten need to move illicit goods and bounty just out of royal gaze. They call it the Old Town, but the man-made additions are only half as old as the citadel above. The only old thing about this place may be the immersive cavern that opens to the sea, an ancient dock of sorts, now repurposed as a port for smugglers, hunters, and yes, even pirates. As the appointed royal historian, I should have reported movement down here ages ago. But as a proponent to the natural growth of the Mondrian citizen, I see the value of the Old Town, and recorded history has decided to turn an unwritten blind eye. It's been far too long since I've walked through these wrought iron doors. Even at noon high, the light doesn't reach this side of town. The clocksmith's building is just at the end of the market near the center, and its front doors are opened about half as much as the back courtyard. Just past the garden lies these iron cellar doors. The clocksmith must know about the traffic behind her shop, but the intricacies behind creating one of her fine timepieces is elaborate and dilatory. To put in a complaint would incite investigation, which would in turn delay production and repair of such a luxury, further endangering the survival of her family in such economic climate. Perhaps they capitalize on such a risky storefront locale. The coast was as clear as it could get. Surprisingly, only a few children scurry by, shouting their chants as they tease and chase each other. Kids safely playing in the garden next to the cloaked passers-by is a startling juxtaposition. I could barely make out the word they were claiming turned their peers into the next elected pursuant. It sounded ancient, familiar. No matter. I joined the periodical strangers and passed through behind the cover of youthful laughter. Inside, there is little light. The damp, rocky halls below weave and descend out of sight. I must have passed two or three traders on the way out, and the nearest entering figure was nearly 80-100 steps ahead. Maybe two more about 50 steps behind. I passed a torch every 200. Still, the dark claimed who or what these people were. I have learned to keep as much distance as possible from anyone down here. A quick brush of the shoulder could cost wallet or watch. And for anyone to catch the slightest glance at the face under the scarf would cost the face its new job. I have learned to trust the darkness whenever possible. Perhaps they choose to look away. Fenalia is a city built on layers. More layers than I care to remember most days. But these deeper layers intrigue me. A few steps more and I'm forced to cover more of my face. I can't risk it. The old pier may be far from the sun, but its light, made cold, still worms its way to these tunnels. I've already passed several doors, some steel, iron, most wood, storage, specialized niche repair shops, independent refineries, and possibly some homes. After a 5-minute zig and a 15-minute zag, I believe I'm on the right path. The tunnels open up to a larger hall lined with wooden kiosks and merchants hawking unseen junk and illegal goods. I'm tempted to peruse the old shops for potential finds, but the roar of the raging waves beyond the wider cavern ahead remind me of my destination. A centuries-old wood and iron fishing vessel, flipped over and converted into a seaside bar serving rare delicacies, sour liquor, and terrible intel to the foulest rats, dogs, and worms Mondrea has to hide. The Drifting Dart, the first Fenalian airship that circumnavigated the continent over 8 centuries ago, and the Fenalian ship that made the first legal and illegal trades with Stalon, and the first ship that was shot down by Stalon at the start of the war. This may or may not be right where it resurfaced. More layers to Fenalian history, slowly sifting their way out with the sands of time. Could this be more than a tribute? Could this repurposed old tavern actually be that legendary ship? No longer restorable, made into a place of sustenance for the ragged subterranean community? I don't have the time or resources at the moment to find out. I'm here to find a ship of my own, and a skilled enough pilot to keep off Fenalian and Stalon radar.
Now what in the hell would the new general need at Fenalia's seediest tavern?
Maybe the guy needs an ale?
Shut! Keep it down!
Before opening the rusty front door of the bar, I looked over my shoulders. Both shoulders. It's customary to do so in such a place. But something in my gut was telling me to be extra wary.
No masks.
Excuse me?
No masks.
Right.
You want service? Lose the scarf, darling.
I pulled up my hood a little higher and sunk my face a bit deeper behind my collar. Only then I promptly lowered the scarf from my face.
That'll do. Watch your step.
Thank you.
A thick screen of haze and aimless chatter nearly halted my entry into the old Muck Palace. It's been over 2 years since my last visit to this pit. I'm surprised it's still open and operating with how much vile piss seeps through. At least the music is pleasant. Constant reminders to keep a shoulder buffer. I made my way to the bar just to my left.
Glass of Weaver's Mead, if you have it.
No.
Araldine's Marbled Brandy, perhaps?
Fresh out.
Wheelblade Ale?
Do you know where you are, friend?
Surprise me, then.
Lousy service yields lousy drinks. The old man pounded a thick, cloudy mix down on the counter. It was chunky and very difficult to stomach the mere sight of it. It brought upon a wretch to each taste bud it defiled. And to the mind, a simple vision of the moldy cask under the grimy counter to further ponder its origin. Where was I indeed?
He's good. Each cask doctored, one-of-kind bottle for chicks and salads, 6-star uppercut to Sissy Joe. Tastes guaranteed to last through future generation. Brew it in-house, believe or not.
Oh, it's my nose bleeding.
The husky hairball of a barkeep hit the bar just enough to rustle a few drops free from everyone else's drink, keeping the place nice and damp.
It's got quite the aftertaste.
After, before, during is good. Now tell me, why a one of King's own here in my bar, below city?
I had hoped the smoke would hide my face at least.
Not face.
Nice coat, Bluey. Buy it off, yeah?
Damn it all. An amateur to these shadows, I had hoped my muted version of the royal colors would not show up in this light. The degrading stature of the burly drunk man on my right convinced me he's seen his fair share of battle. That, and his blackened, shriveled up version of a left leg and arm.
What are you offering?
I ain't got no monies, but I can make little figurines out of crud. Oh, and I give one hell of a handshake.
Take off yours.
Oh, so we're doing this?
He gladly slid his weakened right arm out of the old brown cloak like a piece of cold poultry, and he used it to flop up his lifeless black left arm free like a piece of wet poultry. as I threw my own around him, keeping mine to my scarf staying fixed to my neck and jaw. I will miss that coat. Much warmer. Durable. He'll cherish it for the few years he's got left down here. I can stomach the sweaty inner lining of my new one for maybe a day.
Thank you for your service.
I give the man a light pat on the shoulder, but I like to think it was one final farewell to my aged historian's overcoat. I suppose my new position will come with new uniform.
I can use this to peep on old Braun Braun.
Classy, man.
Keep the change, and forget you ever saw me, both of you. It was a trudge getting into that old man's cloak, but this will make blending in much easier. I turned away from the bar, took a step outwards, and silently surveyed the rest of the tavern for prospective pilots. I needed someone skilled, someone daring, not afraid to skim the waves and fly out of sight. My first instinct was to look towards the back booths, the far corners. Only the late lunch crowd, thirsty dockmen, and washed-up vets, all looking to ease the course. It took me a second to realize the most able pilot here was right in front of me. She started in the shadow just beyond the back hall, and her colors absorbed light through the cracked, vented ceiling with every step toward me.
What's the new grand finale in general looking for in this old dump?
She took a hefty swig of the glass jug in her right hand, and some rusty, bronze-colored swill streamed down the corner of her lips before she heaved it back over her shoulder. I didn't think news would travel as fast down here.
It doesn't. I do. You've got a tail, General. I've got a table. Follow me.
I've never seen this woman before in my life, and she knows who I am. She knows what I am. I have no choice but to follow. If I did not, I would be risking my presence here as a threat or ransom to these inebriated criminals. As we step away from the bar past the hall, I took a quick glance over my shoulders where the tail is still on me. Seems my latest visit to the underworld is going swimmingly.
You need a ship.
What gave that away?
Nice coat. Why else would the Army's new boss man be in the harbor of dirty pilots and bounty hunters? And in disguise, no less?
And which of the two are you, if you don't mind my ask?
Well, aren't you the lucky one?
As we neared the end of the bar and past each of the cracked black leather booths, I picked up a faintly pleasant scent sifting through all the bitter ale, stained leather, and oaky fog. It wasn't overly sweet. Some sort of cedar wood and wild vanilla with notes of blood orange and piston oil? That was easy to pick out amongst it all, and easy to follow. It fit her strong combat boot steps in an odd but maliciously mellow way. Her strong sway pushed past her cloak just enough to notice the armament at her khakied hips, accompanied by a light clink and jingle of what I assume were knee pads, belts, and ammunition. Curiosity kept me close, absorbing what my dry eyes could past her woolen cloak, and I did not want to risk losing her in this late lunch crowd. We stopped at what I assume is her booth and quickly sat. She took the back bench, facing the entirety of the room. I sat facing my new host, back against the crowd.
This is me.
And who, pray tell, are you?
Hazel Renald. Pilot, dirty, hunter, bounties.
Pirate?
Pilot.
She had the tall, dark green glass jug in her right hand and stealthily removed her hood with her left, just enough so I could make out some human features. At first, I thought she was the one exception in the room to the no-mask policy, but then I realized that those were bandages covering her deeply freckled face. I could only really see about 30 or 40% of it. Her left eye must have been damaged, as it too was concealed by bandages, like some makeshift eye patch covering one of her dark green eyes. The more I stared, the more her freckles looked like shrapnel scars, cuts, and pockmarks. She tipped her square jaw back and took another swig of her jug. Luckily, a sliver of dusty sunlight managed to creep through the wallboards and crossed our table. I could make out dark brown, maybe black curly hair, half-tied behind those face bandages. How in Lunaea
glorious grace did you figure me out so quickly?
Slowly lift your scarf back up and turn your head left and cough. Huh. Middle of the bar, two pale blues.
Pale Blues was a common nickname the city folk tacked onto anyone loyal to the Fenalian brand. The higher the rank, the deeper the blue. But even King Brotley's midnight blues look pale in the desert dust. The legless vet at the bar could now consider himself one of the deepest, a few shades deeper than the two beside him.
Ah, oh, shit.
You think he saw us?
Just flag the barman down or something. Order a drink. Don't look so obvious.
Beers, please, monsieur. Strong ones, on the quick.
You boys want strong, yes?
I've seen them before. On campus. No doubt from Captain Torsion's personal squadron.
Kinda hard to miss.
Ms. Renault.
Hazel. None of that formal junk will fly down here.
You spot a man in a blue coat being followed by two others. What makes you think I'm some sort of general?
You kidding? You walk with more pomp than any one woman or man here. Try slouching for once in your fancy life, man. Well, you've no doubt noticed a theme down here. Ain't getting much of a deal without a deal. How much you paying? The general's old paycheck's gotta be pretty hefty.
When you hear of my destination, you won't want payment.
Eh? You drive a hard bargain, General.
Lennox. Donovan Lennox.
Well, General Donovan Lennox, you might want to start barking hard price at these old sailors instead. Good luck to you.
Deadark. I realized I shouldn't have reached out and clenched her hand as she exited the booth. That word alone is enough to silence any of these old sailors.
Ain't a thing. Not real. Whatever fake sunken treasure map you bought from the rascals outside, you can toss. That place ain't worth it.
So you've been?
There? Any pilot with two balls has at least tried to skim the desert surrounding. The hot, unforgiving wind is as unpredictable as any one of these fellows' work ethic. Ain't much to see but an endless blockade of walloping waves, overheating engines, and dust. I hear they're constantly adding to the ship graveyard weekly. Can't miss it.
I have no treasure map. I have a dream.
Shh. You shut up! You shut the hell up!
And just like that, it was as if the entire room fell silent. Except it didn't. The bustle and fog of the drifting dart stayed strong into the early afternoon, but the air around Ms. Renault's stare blocked off the rest of the world within an invisible wall, and the flood of thoughts erupted from her mind, with my next hanging words the lighthouse in the storm, bulb aimed directly back at my eyes, blinding me beyond any sort of safety amongst her shore.
You know what kind of trouble you get in flinging a word like that up on people? Sure, say pirate all you want here, but dream? Not here. Not anywhere. Follow me.
The two spies of Avela are getting quite inebriated at the bar.
You just see that?
I did, I believe I did. I can't believe your eyes. Unless you drank another full pint of that cloudy slop, spilled it all over his fancy couch, and passed out. I could barely stomach mine, but I did. This old Lenny high-fived me with his floppy arm.
Oh, damn it. Bare ass. You can't have seriously fallen for that code switch trick. How much did you drink? He's over there.
What? Well, this empty doctor.
Pay the man, Boris. And get up.
Me get up? I was up as up gets, friendo. Hey, General, can you do that high five thing but with your limp foot?
Boris, you.
Oh, and with a bit of slight, we were long gone.
You're listening to Andrea Memories.
I need a whiskey, hollow point ammo, and someone to just try.
A new sci-fi comic thriller, retro in style, modern in feel. A Quentin Tarantino film in space for fans of alien and 80s sci-fi horror. Violent and brash, no holds barred, neon explosion fest through time.
I've been out in space for a decade. No telling how far we've gone. Does it matter?
Follow Hannah, a young girl, an unwilling test subject to government experiments. Traveling through the cosmos with her guardian, the Red Angel, a dark force leads her to confront a troubled, perilous past.
Doesn't matter why they're in distress. It's a distress signal. We're going.
We all have terrifying demons. Dark Heaven Girl harnesses a terror of her own to face down those monstrosities, physical and mental, to bring out the light within.
Issue 1 available on Indiegogo.com.
Backers of this new comic series will receive a limited run variant cover by Jet Falco. Dark Heaven Girl by Drayton W. Jones. A guardian to one, maybe a devil to another.
Nexus, The Search for the Ocean Shard, is a science fiction adventure graphic novel over 1,200 pages in the making.
And you want me to get all chummy with some weird mechanoid you found?
Follow a band of treasure hunters as they seek an object of monumental power, the fabled Ocean Shard. Though many consider the shard itself to be a tall tale, there certainly are a lot of forces trying to keep our heroes from finding it.
Just talk to him and you'll see.
Over 40 chapters are free to read online, with weekly updates since 2006. The journey continues at nextus.com. NEXTUUS.com.
This is Mondrian Memories.
In the span of what must have been 4 or 5 seconds, Ms. Renault blanketed the booth opening with her wide brown cloak, threw up the table on a hinge near the wall, and kicked a hidden switch by the bench, releasing a small hatch into the floor leading to a narrow set of dark stair. Great. More dark corridors is just what this place needs. She ushered our way, and with a quick flick of her wrist cloak in hand, the table was back to normal, leaving onlookers, if any, unsuspecting.
I take it you are regular here?
Save it. Maybe far fewer, but ears are sharper here. We'll speak once we're in my ship.
I assumed the passageway was one of the Drifting Dart's best-kept secrets, only privy to those bounty hunters skilled enough to pay for regular access. Every booth in that bar could have led to a different exit, and the Dart could be another hub of underground secret passageways. Finalia is a city built on layers, and those layers go deep. As more dim sunlight found its way to bounce through the narrow tunnel's walls, the bitter sea air filled our noses, soon accompanied by violent moshing of waves. The corridor opened to a shallow cliff edge that served as an alternate entrance to the lower docks. The docks were just low enough to stay out of most basic airship monitors and radars, hugging the tide with every rise and fall. We were lucky tide was average today. I could taste that foul tempest. The closer we got to the boardwalks, the more I noticed it wasn't much of a dock at all, but rather an intricate network of floating platforms connected to one another by immense chains and massive rope systems. Since the falling of the sea levels and unpredictable rage of the tides, most ship travel has migrated to the skies. However, if they had the right metal to reinforce themselves against the will of the sea, a small fraction of Mondrea's illegitimate trade has braved the choppy waters for several decades. Cheaper than flying. And deadlier.
Not a word. Stay low.
Ms. Renault was surprisingly nimble in all that hunter gear, cloak, and armor. As I tried to keep up, she pranced upon each narrow oceanside cliff rock and man-made platform, but it was getting increasingly difficult in this grotesque veteran's coat. Once we rounded the corner, I saw it. Her ship was slender, a dark crystalline green with a softly pointed snub nose, sharp along the edges with smooth curves that waved upwards, blending its slender wings at the hip, forming a streaming back fender to spoiler line. It would have blended perfectly into the flowing ocean waves beneath the platforms if it wasn't for the bright copper piping that jutted out along various spots of the hull. As random as it seemed, the pipes and tubes had a certain pattern to them, as if each one had a dual purpose, systemic and aesthetic. It was a gleaming dark steam emerald, an owl, geared to glide along Mondrian waters like a steam-powered Tantris.
The Owl Maiden, I call her.
Fitting. The more I stared, the more I saw the prowess of the ancient jade owl, wings at full span, diving to her prey.
She's beautiful.
She's a tough old girl. Hope you don't get seasick.
I hope so, too.
She punched in a quick sequence of what I had to guess were numbers on an invisible panel on the backside of the ship. A gleaming line of neon green charged up and around her position, revealing a sleek door that slid open, leading inside.
Home on the water. It's cozy if you like the sway.
Sit anywhere?
Anywhere but the shiny seat up front.
The innards of the owl were a bit too cozy, but that can't be helped. I'm a guest, after all. There were greasy rags and old maps and ammunition casings and spare ship parts and old books. And if the place had some sort of organization system, I'd feel right at home. It is said that messy home is a mark of genius, but perhaps a disharmony from the outside and inside may be a mark of insanity. Hopefully more dialogue will reveal a turn towards the former. She clears her throat, sweeps a stack of crusted maps off a small wooden chair, flips it around, and sits in front of me before I even reach a passenger's bench near the side window. She sat exactly like someone of her off-the-radar status would sit, relaxed and collected, yet always on her guard.
So, I need to make my way towards the north end of the sea. Bounty business. Loose ends I'd like tied up.
Piracy.
Not that it's any of your concern, General.
So you're willing to take me back around south to Deadark after your business through the north? Pirate territory.
You just love that word, don't ya?
I normally wouldn't condone such heinous acts, being a man of the city.
Well, everyone's a man of something, I suppose. You might find your outlook on heinous acts change real quick out on the water. I'm willing to listen to what you've got to offer. And honestly, why you'd want to off yourself in a place like that, if you're willing to stomach the next few hours.
How do you know if I'm seasick?
I haven't even cast off yet, and you're already Maldemar. Now, what the hell was all that back in the bar about dreams?
You believe me?
I've seen my fair share of half-crazed idiots spouting up their drunken dream slur, days of their youth, adventures at sea, getting a second chance, and starting it all over. Bull, the lot of it, I say. But the newly appointed general lands in the seediest spot of the underworld in a half-ass disguise, claims a dream, told him to hitch a ride to, of all forsaken places, Deadark. Which would you believe?
You know a good opportunity when you see one.
I know where the money is. Speaking of, what exactly are you offering me, Mr. Dreamboat?
In my research of the ancient Mondrian civilizations, I've uncovered information of some unreachable hordes stored deep within Deadark Trench.
Uh-huh.
So you have heard of it.
Uh-huh. And you think you can reach said unreachable treasure? You know all Mondrian sailors can agree on one thing. Pirate or otherwise, the depths below Deadark don't exist. What? Did your dream tell you how to get to it?
Somewhat.
Somewhat? Dreams are not something to blab on about. I've met thousands of people on my travels. Killed thousands as well. Each one says one of two things. They've never had a dream. Or they wish they could have one before they bide it respectively. And here you are, claiming you've actually had one, and you're still alive? I'm starting to think I should have left you back with a lot of bullhawkers at the bar.
Ms. Renault stands up and looks down on me. We maintain eye contact until she finally turns to the back of the ship, where I notice there's not a single layer of wood, glass, or sheet metal between us and the engines as she kicks into roaring life. I can smell the exhaust creep in. But the ventilation fans and cabin air filters of this old boat work just well enough to keep us conscious.
I do see things.
I reach into my inner coat pocket slowly. The bounty hunter instinct kicks in and Ms. Renault takes a step forward, hand at her hilt.
No, it's all right.
I'm not armed.
Well, you better be. Death wish number two.
The crimson glow is gone, but the shard is still bright as ever. As bright as a deeply dark polished meteor-like rock could be.
Nice. Looking to add some Deadark eggs to your collection, eh?
In my dream, I saw a devastating death. It was as if I died. Some ancient warrior, a sage perhaps, had struck me down with some ancient tongue, bound my soul to a lifeless tome of sorts, forever sealed away within the deepest, unreachable depths of Mondrea, beneath canyon, cavern, and sea, locked away, forced to suffer this confinement without solace. No life, no love, no peace, only dark. I could not breathe. I could not see. I could not think. I was simply left in the deep with a punishment worse than death. I was left to slowly wither away, alone. Except I wasn't alone. I had come from the ancient Mondrea, the dreaming Mondrea. A world of boundless wonder and temptation. I touched it. I lived it. I saw a lifetime of another dreaming man, and I saw his pains, his struggles, his visions of a gleaming future. And that spell woman chanted some dark speech, and I suddenly became a whisper in the back corners of my corroding mind, echoing back and forth until it destroyed my very being. How was this planet once such a fruitful tree, when all we see now is the rotting, barkless shell of its stump left to crumble in the ruthless sun? When I awoke, I was holding this key.
A paperweight.
It is the key to reopening the sealed book, breaking it forth from the depths of Mondrea, and ushering limitless power of Dring back to its back to our people.
A nice paperweight. So you saw a dream, and then you saw no dream. Am I missing something? You think we can get back that dream from whoever stole it? You actually think the treasure beneath Deadark is dreams?
I don't expect you to understand the breadth of the situation here. Look, Ms. Renald, if there is talk of another priceless treasure lining this ancient tomb of dream, so be it. It's yours, all of it. But I promise you, when, not if, but when you are blessed with the power of the boundless dream, you won't want for another man-made coin.
And if it's all just more drunken spun's shattery?
Name your price. You guessed right when you called out my new position back at the tavern. That new position comes with overly generous benefits. Consider yourself well off for the entirety of your remaining days.
I'll consider myself your highest debtor, friend. Well, the next Grand Commanding General Finalis Royalis drives a hard bargain and drives me to sea. Brace yourself.
Ms. Hazel Renald winked with her visible eye, turned about to sit in the shiny seat up front, and in seconds, the engine was tearing us from the anchors of that seat underbelly and nudging us out to sea. I leaned a bit to grip the seat, hoping the tossing sea wouldn't toss me.
This is Mondrea Memories. Keep listening for a special message from the creator of the show, as well as a bonus memory. For a full cast and crew list, please visit dreamersecho.com/podcast. stay awake.
Hey, everyone. Thank you so much for listening to episode 2 of Mondrea Memories. I can't express fully how thankful I am for your time and all of your appreciation. I work really hard on creating a unique listening experience, and I truly appreciate you all. Thanks for listening. This story is a part of a larger Dreamers Echo universe that is constantly expanding. The podcast is made to be enjoyed as a standalone adventure, but what you might not know is it can also be a thrilling prequel to the comic, which returns with new pages and soundtracks this fall. Feel free to check it out at dreamersecho.com/store and pick up an autographed copy for your own collection. As this show continues to grow, we would like to invite every single one of you to be a big part of the creation process. Outside of my lovely guest voice talent, I do about 100% of the work here, and it is quite a challenge to create an epic-sounding adventure as it is to find amazing, supportive people out there who will keep the lights on. Please consider joining our Patreon page to keep the comics, music, art, and yes, these one-of-a-kind adventure podcasts going strong. As a supporter, you'll gain access to some amazing rewards, including exclusive t-shirts. We're going to have a special poll just for patrons to choose the design of our Mondrea Memories official t-shirt. Alongside that, you can get every comic volume, every chapter soundtrack song, and much more digital content that you can't even believe exists. And not only that, you'll become part of the community of artists, musicians, crafters, and listeners who are doing their part to see Dreamers Echo become something great. Visit dreamersecho.com and look for our Patreon link. You can't miss it. Every dollar goes a long way. Please leave a review where you listen to your podcasts. We hope we've earned your love. Thanks for joining us. Keep the dream alive. Oh, and don't forget to share. Hashtag Dreamers Echo, hashtag Mondrea Memories. And last but not least, since you made it this far, here's your bonus memory. See you next time.
I don't see them anywhere, Levi.
Damn it! They had to have fled from the Tether Docks. No other way out of this hell.
Wait.
What?
Hear that, mate?
Yeah. Engine kicking on. Just out of reach. Round back.
Hurry!
Wait, turn on your radar cloaking device so they don't spot us.
Radar cloak? Why the heck didn't we use that in the bar so that lady wouldn't see us?
Radar cloaking doesn't make you invisible, bare ass. It just distorts any sort of ping we give off if they have radar in their ship.
Oh, that's nifty.
Hurry, they're getting away.
Wouldn't it be better to go topside for our own ship? Maybe commandeer a docked fishing vessel?
No time. Look, her ship's by the water. We'd lose it above in our dropship. Jump!
This is a pretty slick plan, Levi.
Hey, you were the one who stayed up and watched him all night. Cap said proactive, and this is proactive.
Damn thing shocked me. This cloak thing is working water, right, Levi?
Oh, guess not. Well, as long as we stay close to the ship, we shouldn't notice us on screen. Hold tight. She's taking off. Not me, you ass. The ship.
Oh, right.
Copyright 2020, DreamersEcho.com.
Creative Commons Attribution License Non-Commercial No Derivatives.